ready to rally for your comrades.
Well, I think the BLM riots had something similar to this. The Occupy Wall Street movement was something similar to this.
It was very scary last night, to be honest, and asking them, will you be ready to rally for your comrades? More and more reports of people just slipping into the gates. The UTS president supposedly is just speaking to the cops and like letting whomever through, regardless of if they're student CUID holders.
Part of this, by the way, is critical theory, which has been spreading as an ideology through universities, where they believe the world is divided into oppressors and oppressed, sort of like capitalists and workers. Same kind of dichotomy, and they see a revolutionary struggle as the solution.
All right, folks, we've made it halfway through the work week, more than halfway through the work week. We're on a glide path to the weekend. Donald Trump gets the day off of court because it's Wednesday. You know how those schedules work. You go to court Monday, Tuesday, you get the Wednesday off. Thursday, Friday, you're back in, then you get your weekend. That is quite a schedule that they have to keep up there. But Trump is, Trump's got the day off. We'll see what he does or where he spends. I know he met with the former prime minister of Japan last night. He's definitely being strategic about his time and using it while he's in New York. So that's interesting. Protests continue to grow on college campuses and universities. I'm going to get to that in a second because I want to really break down why this matters and what's happening. Before that, though, I want to tell you, we've got brand new polling out. And as concerned as I've been about the abortion issue, this sheds some light on it. So let me share it with you. Bloomberg is out with this thing. Among the seven battleground states, Trump leads in six. Let me give you kind of a laydown of where this is. Arizona, he's up 7 points, 49-42. Think about that. And the trend is slightly upward. Again, it's not that much from last time, but it's moving in the right direction. And Arizona is a state I really care about because I think the abortion issue is going to matter there in particular. Georgia, Trump is pretty much flat. 6 point lead, 49-43. Him being right there in both of those states at 49 is key because once you get to 50, it's sort of obviously, you know, then you're fairly good, right? You once you get 50 plus one, you win the state. Those are good numbers and they're holding steady. Nevada, he ticked up. He is now up 51-43, an 8 point lead in Nevada. That's huge. That is huge. This has been elusive for Republicans since back in the George W. Bush days. North Carolina, Trump is up 10, 51-41. Again, key number. He's up above 41. Pennsylvania up one. That's a tight race. And I think that's going to stay tight, as I've always said. Wisconsin, he's up four now. He popped up. Biden down a little, 48-44. Here's the one state he's not winning in, Michigan. He's losing by two, which is the margin error of 47-45. But I'll tell you, this is really solid good news. And the thing that, as I mentioned, was intriguing, the abortion issue, not that big of a deal for Republicans, a slightly bigger deal for independents, and a big deal for Democrats, meaning the people who care about this, we weren't probably going to vote for us in the first place. But the big issue I want to talk to you today is about what's going on these college campuses, Columbia, Yale, these protests where the students are leading the university. They're taking over, they're spewing anti-Semitic stuff, and the university presidents aren't doing anything. What's it like on college campuses? We've got a student from Columbia with us, Jess Schwab. She's literally on campus. She's going to tell us what it's like. And then Jay Green of the Heritage Foundation. He's a senior research fellow for education policy, and he spent almost two decades on the campus of the University of Arkansas, where he served as distinguished professor and chair of the Department of Education Reform. These folks know what's happening, and I want to break down what's going on these college campuses to find out how scary it is and where this thing goes. But before I get to that conversation with Jay and Jess, I want to tell you about two of our amazing sponsors that help keep this show free across all platforms, and then get into it with Jay and Jess. Do you want $250 free right now? $250. I got your attention, didn't I? If you're a business owner that has, I don't know, five or more employees, or maybe you're not the owner, but you're the one who makes big financial decisions, that's your job, you're running the finance part of this or the expenses part, then listen up. I will put $250 in your pocket right now. No strings attached. You just have to go check out and talk to my friends at Ramp, right? Go to ramp.com/Spicer. You will want to find out what they're doing, because if you're the guy or the woman that controls the financing at the company, or you're the owner, Ramp is going to make your expense process unbelievably easier. They issue credit cards that you can give to each one of your employees. You can control all of the expenses. It streamlines so much. I had a guest on the show a couple months ago, and they called me afterward and said, I saw you talking about Ramp. We switched over to Ramp, and you wouldn't believe how much time it saves us. Helps us streamline things. We can put controls in place for our employees, how much they can spend. The reports are fantastic. If you are that business owner or the person in charge of the financing, go to ramp.com/Spicer. Get the $250, but more importantly, make your life a lot easier, because Ramp is going to allow you to get those credit cards, the expense cards, for each of your employees, and streamline so much of your expense and accounting systems that it'll make your life so much easier. Ramp.com/Spicer. All right, folks, if you've had a really long day, you've been standing all day at work, you've been out doing errands, you're with the kids maybe at a game, you know what it's like to have really tired feet. I know that feeling. I've got a solution for you. Gravity Defier shoes. These shoes are not just ordinary footwear. They're designed to provide you with the ultimate comfort and support. They've got these custom orthotics. And if you're somebody who's had foot issues before, you know how important the orthotics are in them. These all come with custom orthotics. So if you're running around in any way, shape, or form on your shoes, these Gravity Defier shoes are exactly what you need. Every pair comes with these things that are perfectly fitted. And then they've also got Verso patented shock. This is like the stuff that's in trampolines. It's in the heel to avoid important shock when you're walking back and forth. And it also helps you walk better, have better posture, taking a lot of stress that improves your calf and major muscle groups. So these shoes help you in so many different ways, but don't take my word for it. Read the thousands of positive reviews that come with this. People are experiencing less pain, walking in more comfort, have better posture. And if you use code SPICER30 and you go to GDEFY.com, you get $30 off of your first order over $150. This is just in time for Mother's Day or Father's Day. So if it's not for you and you want to give it as a gift, you got the perfect one. Once again, just go to GDEFY.com and use code SPICER30. That gets you $30 off your order of $150 or more. I want to thank you guys for joining me. Jess, I want to start with you. Just paint a picture for us of what it's like on Columbia's campus right now.
So last night was about the last amount of interaction that I had with the movement on campus, the pro-Palestine movement. And they gathered in a crowd of easily 300 to 400 people. There's people literally all over campus, right in front of Butler, right in front of the Columbia Journalism School. And there was one man who had a megaphone and was telling people how everyone should proceed in the event that there's going to be police arrests. And he said that they were going to split up into platoons and that they should have people on the ready to be able to stand at the entrances of the initial encampment. So that's right on the front of Butler on one of the lawns, to defend the encampment, and referring to everyone as comrades and asking them, will you be ready to rally for your comrades?
But we will know because of that in advance of an imminent sweep. We are entering a period of high alert for the next 3 days. And that is why I urge all of you to talk to your friends as well and let them know that we may need people to turn up quickly, en masse, in front of the encampment to defend the encampment. Will you be ready to rally for your comrades? We are so close to divestment!
It was very scary last night, to be honest. And as we were walking around the encampment, we saw people taking the tents and moving them to a different lawn Now there's things called the red zone. Red zone being people who are willing to stay and get arrested, and a yellow zone, people who I believe just want to move their, like, relocate their tents so they don't get arrested. So it seems like there's a lot of strategy going on.
Jay, you've been following movements like this for decades. Put this in context for me. Is this a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10? Is this a 1? And what was the last similar event that sort of we can maybe relate to?
Well, I think the BLM riots had something similar to this. The Occupy Wall Street movement was something similar to this. And while I agree, it is very frightening on Columbia campus, and it's spreading to other campuses, MIT, Rice. It's coming to a campus near you if we don't get on top of this situation. But right now, I don't think it's generally scary. I mean, for the most part, these are fairly privileged kids at an Ivy League school who are kind of cosplaying revolutionaries. And look, I mean, it can tip into something really dangerous. And if we go all the way back to the 60s, the Weather Underground were a revolutionary movement that, you know, bombed buildings and robbed banks and killed police. And, you know, Bill Ayers, one of the leaders of that movement, was the son of a Commonwealth Edison executive. I mean, you know, these are very rich people who can turn into revolutionaries. And I do worry a little bit that we may go in that direction here in not too long. But for now, I think we really need the adults, the leaders of universities, political leaders to form a united front against this kind of political violence on our university campuses and refocus those institutions on their true purpose, which is education and not a revolutionary organization.
Jess, you heard Jay's description. Do you know any of these people who are engaging this, or are these students and you have no affiliation with them at all?
I know a few of them, and they should all be Columbia University students, considering that's the policy as it stands. However, I've had many interactions with people who are not students, admittedly so. The admissions I've caught on camera and admissions that I've told public safety about. And when I tell public safety about them, there was one man who admitted to me very, very quickly he was not a student. And I told public safety. Public safety went to remove him. And then a couple hours later, I asked public safety, did you get to remove that person? And they said, well, the community leaders told us to leave. And we didn't like being surrounded by press. We didn't want to be the front page of a newspaper. And I just said, okay, and I had to leave. I mean, it's infuriating that public safety has their first priority being to abide by this made-up community these made-up community guidelines that are written on a white piece of cardboard with red marker. You know, it's child's play, and it's ridiculous that public safety can't even enforce the rules that stand underneath their badge. You know, if you're going to wear that badge, what does it stand for?
Do you feel, just Jay mentioned safety on the thing, and I get it. I've seen this before on liberal arts campuses. Well, not to this extreme. Do you feel safe? Do you think that this is just, as he said, a bunch of privileged kids sort of acting this out, or are they mixing in with dangerous elements that question your safety?
I think that's a very good question. I think mostly, provided the gates do stay locked and, you know, some of these student access only rules are enforced, it is mainly just spoiled rich kids like cosplaying as refugees. So that part is like, okay, yeah, it is mostly Columbia students. So again, I'm not terrified, definitely not terrified, but you know, there's been more and more reports of people just slipping into the gates. And also the UTS president supposedly is just speaking to the cops and like letting whomever through, regardless of if they're student CUID holders. So, yeah, that part really does scare me, that knowing that you could have someone who's the guy who works at Wendy's, who has nothing to lose, on our campus in this very radicalized environment, and in a very anonymous environment where you can't identify them. And you're also compounding that by being in a group of, you know, 300 to 400 people. That part is scary to me.
Jay, you've, before joining the Heritage Foundation, were part of a university system. What obligation, based on what Jess just described, does the administration of a university have to protect those students?
Well, they have a paramount obligation to protect their students and to keep their doors open and make classes and the campus accessible to all students on an equal basis. And they are clearly failing in that obligation. Classes have been moved online. They're allowing essentially a minority of radical students to bully everyone else on campus. I mean, this is not widely popular in our society, and it's not even widely popular on college campuses. Most students would just like to, you know, get their degrees and get jobs and move on with their lives. And these revolutionary fantasies are, again, the ambitions of a very aggressive but minority group of students. And unfortunately, university leadership is cowardly and unprincipled and unwilling to enforce their rules uniformly. They do enforce them on some people. For example, a Jewish professor was prevented from entering the campus. His ID was deactivated.
Can you back up, please?
My card has been deactivated? Yeah. Why?
Can you back up, please?
Uh-huh.
Wait. Whoa. Everybody, my card has been deactivated. This is Cass Holloway, the COO. This is Gerald Lewis. They were in the meeting where I asked them if Hamas is a terror organization, and they couldn't say that it is a terrorist organization. Why? I'm a professor.
But they are letting, as she said, others from the community slip in. They're all wearing keffiyehs to cover their face, so it's hard to know who's who once they're in. And so it is a volatile situation where it could get out of hand. And there's no reason for this. The university can crack down on it right away, enforce the rules, prevent these tent cities from popping up. That some university leaders are willing to do that. The University of Minnesota cracked down right away. NYU even cracked down quickly. Columbia somehow seems unable to enforce its rules and function as an educational institution and to protect the civil rights of all of their students, particularly Jewish students who are being explicitly targeted by these radicals in this mob.
Jess, a lot has been made that if this was a different scenario, if the students were gay or Black, that we wouldn't be having this discussion, that they would, the administration would snuff this out. Do you think that that's true?
I personally believe that if you were to replace like Zionists in their chant with any other word for some minority group, that there would be a lot more vocal condemnation of such rhetoric. Like the other day when my friends and I walked onto the lawn that where the encampment used to stand, we were, you know, encircled by a group of 200 plus people, and they chanted at us like we are going to take one step forward and push the Zionists off our encampment. And they did take a step forward, and then they took another step forward. And yeah, I sort of think you're right that if you were to replace Zionists with another word for another group of persecuted people, it would be different. But for some reason, there's always an exception for anti-Semitism.
Yeah. And as far as Jewish students in particular on Columbia campus, how are they handling this?
Well, right now it's Passover, so some of them have gone home, which I guess coincidentally works out because the rabbi at Hillel here did encourage students to go home. I sort of disagree with that because if we leave, they win. And that's exactly what they want, is they want to scare us. And so when we leave campus, that's when we reward their scare tactics. So I disagree with that suggestion. However, I know a lot of kids who do feel unsafe, and if they feel unsafe, like they should do what they need to do in order to feel comfortable on campus. And actually, I just got an email saying that all our finals will have a remote option. So, yeah.
As a student, do you feel like, I mean, part of my college experience, despite my feelings towards the institution that I went, was the experience of getting to affiliate with other students and have those personal one-on-one experiences. Do you feel like you're getting cheated when they say, we're just going to do it online, both financially and in terms of experience?
I certainly do to a degree, but thankfully this is the last week of classes. If they were to have said this, you know, halfway through the year, I certainly would be fighting for some sort of tuition refund, because this is not the, you know, the tuition that I thought I was paying for. So yeah, it is the last week of classes. I'm still angry about it, and angry that it, like to your point about the not really being able to have these intimate one-on-one conversations. I think like the culture now on campus is, if you're not wearing a keffiyeh, if you're not wearing a mask, and you ask any slightly, I don't know, interrogative questions about what people's beliefs are, they're going to be suspicious and they're going to be closed off, because I'm not wearing a keffiyeh, I'm not wearing a mask. And if I want to talk to someone about what's going on either in Israel or on campus, and they are wearing a keffiyeh and they are wearing a mask, immediately they look at me with suspicion, and clearly they think I'm automatically a Zionist, and they don't want to talk to me, and they want to, you know, make me leave the campus. So yeah, it forecloses a lot of those opportunities.
Yeah. Jay, is this something that has been brewing beneath the surface for a while and we just didn't know about it, or we weren't paying attention to it, we didn't see it, or is this a new trend?
I think it has been building, but it certainly has accelerated after October 7th. But it's also being fueled by foreign interests. I mean, this is not a completely spontaneous movement. This is being organized and funded in part from abroad by actors who are, you know, cleverly pursuing their national interests at our expense by poisoning our kids and riling them up for disruption. And so, again, a big part of this, by the way, is critical theory, which has been spreading as an ideology through universities. And I think that's part of what has accumulated over time. So, I mean, look,
quick follow-up, sure. What I think is interesting is the students are out there doing this, but the faculty clearly has their back, right? We've seen the faculty walk off in protest. Is that a new phenomenon where the faculty and the students are aligned, or is it usually one group or another?
That is new. The faculty have become increasingly radicalized at elite universities. And you know, when I was starting in academia, conservatives were being pushed out of academia. But now liberals are being pushed out by progressives and radicals. And so that is the turn that has occurred in the last 10 years, in last 5 years in particular, and it's exploded since October 7th.
Jess, prior to this, did you know where your professors came down on an issue like this, or was this not really something that came to the surface?
I definitely didn't know where my professors came down on this issue unless I would ask them, but truly it was not discussed in class at all. And I mean, maybe that's because I take a lot of psych courses, despite my major being human rights. Even in my human rights courses, like we wouldn't talk about this. It was always like pushed to the side. And you know, that's really unfortunate, because if of any subject, human rights should be the place where, you know, the students there have the capacity for holding this open dialogue that may involve a lot of unpleasant viewpoints or very tense moments. And so this school should be teaching us how to not avoid those moments just because they're a little painful. It should be teaching us how to work through the pain and how to still, you know, empathize with someone else's viewpoint, even if you don't fully agree with it, just to try to put yourselves in their shoes. And this university so far is not trying to do that.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to ask you to do me a favor. Think about where you were 10 years ago. Do you think that you're the same person you are? I know sometimes, if I'm being honest, maybe not me, right? I've got a little less energy. I've got a little less muscle tone. I'm working hard. Trust me. One of the things that I've found, though, that helps me is a supplement from my friends at Nugenix, and it's got Tesnor in it right now. This is giving us back that testosterone that we've lost over the years. And I think that if you know what I'm talking about, that lack of energy, the folks at Nugenix are making sure that we've got it. And if you text 231-231 and use Spicer, you will get a free sample. That's easy. No harm, no foul. You get to try it for free and see if it works for you. 231-231, text the word Spicer. And here's the thing. You're going to get a free bottle of Thermo X. It's an unbelievable fat incinerator. So you're helping your testosterone, you're kick-starting your energy levels, and you're also getting this amazing fat incinerator. I mean, what could be a better deal? And it's, if you text 231-231 Spicer, you have nothing to lose. Try it now. You'll get that complimentary bottle. And remember that texting enrolls you into recurring automated text messaging. Consent is not required to purchase. Message and data rates, as always, may apply. This is the number one doctor recommended brand by primary care physicians based on an independent study conducted by IQVIA 2022. So Jay mentioned these foreign influences. Who do you think is influencing students right now? Like, as this thing evolved since October 7th, is it the professors? Is it these foreign influences? Is it social media? Where are these students getting their influencers, the large degree of talking points and leadership from?
I sort of think that it may be from social media. I'm honestly not on social media. Like, I had a Twitter and I just recently started using it probably like 4 days ago, but otherwise I'm not really on like TikTok or Instagram. But I do think that because most of my generation is obsessed with it, that they probably get their information from there, and then they get, you know, coddled in these, in what's called like an information cocoon, and then becomes this huge echo chamber of, you know, confirmation bias, as we've all probably experienced. And look, I'm guilty of it too. Like, now when I see things on my Twitter feed, I'm like, oh, that aligns with my viewpoint. That also aligns with my viewpoint. Like, maybe I should try to seek out some disconfirmatory evidence. But it is hard to do that, especially when, you know, you're just sort of scrolling through maybe passively. But And then I think what also hurts or maybe inflames their position on this issue is just the general woke culture at Columbia. You know, it's a liberal arts institution, not conservative arts. So, it's already this echo chamber. It's just a matter of people sort of finding their, like, self-sorting into their own echo chambers, too.
Jay, it's been a few years since I've been on a college campus as a student. And I think back to my time there about what I would have been engaged with or who was influencing. Obviously, we didn't have social media then. What do you think are the drivers? You mentioned the foreign influences. Do you think that, like, social media? I just can't imagine back in the day, this kind of thing happening on campus the way it's happening now. And I never would have thought that it would have been Jewish students the target of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I was in college, divestment from South Africa was an apartheid issue, and people built shanty towns and slept in them overnight. But it didn't feel revolutionary or very menacing. A lot of it seemed to be, to impress girls. And that felt, this doesn't feel the same in that way. And I do think social media is inflaming it. And it's one of the vehicles by which foreign influences are being entered into the situation. So people are getting inflamed, not directly necessarily from foreign agents, but indirectly.
And so where was that turning point that I mean, I don't think it all just started October 7th. Was it, you know, you mentioned Occupy Wall Street a little while ago. What was it that suddenly said, hey, we should be using our time at college to protest things?
I think it's when university leadership and faculty became increasingly progressive and began to abandon the liberal norms of free exchange and open dialogue and truth seeking. When they abandoned those things, which is really within the last 10 years, and started reconceiving universities as agents for change. And so scholarship and advocacy became indistinguishable to them. And they began to drive out liberal faculty for progressive faculty who were influenced by this vague Marxist theory called critical theory, where they believe the world is divided into oppressors and oppressed, sort of like capitalists and workers, same kind of dichotomy. And they see a revolutionary struggle as the solution to the oppression that they believe they're facing. This ideology was a very small minority in academia 20, 30 years ago, but it has become quite influential in the last decade.
Jess, in these human rights classes that you've been taking, did you see the seeds of it coming to fruition in the discussions that you guys would have about other issues? Or was this kind of a surprise to you as it bubbled up?
I think we would have more discussions that sort of exposed where these very, very leftist and progressive ideologies were taking us in this psychology course when we were discussing who should be able to have rehabilitative treatment instead of being sent to prison. And there was a lot of students in my class saying even murderers, like even it didn't matter what crime you committed, you should still have access to rehabilitation instead of punishment. And in fact, some shouldn't be punished at all. Some should not be sent to jail, right, or prison. And in my mind, I was thinking, okay, well, what if you have someone who kills your parents? You're gonna feel the same way. You know, it's sort of like this detachment from reality. And it's very infuriating because it, you know, if you think that way, and you want to go into legislation or become some sort of legislator or, you know, nonprofit or work sort of on the in that realm, your policies that you're going to be creating are going to also be very detached from reality and therefore less effective in reality. So that's sort of where I saw some of the seeds of this, I guess, like revolutionary sort of hallucinatory thought process sort of present. Sorry, stumbling, but yeah.
No, that's, thank you. Jay, Speaker Mike Johnson's going to be up there today. You saw a lot of the New York congressional delegation earlier in the week there. Elise Stefanik was very effective at calling out the presidents of Harvard and UPenn. They ultimately resigned. There's calls for the president of Columbia to resign. From where you used to sit, in the world of academia, do they care about what politicians are saying? Does that matter to them? What is driving them? If you're sitting in those senior seats at an institution, who are you caring about?
Well, they care a lot about money, and they need a lot of it. These are ridiculously expensive institutions that live to a very large degree off of public subsidy. I mean, taxpayers are footing the bill for all this nonsense. And so if politicians begin to make threatening noises about cutting off funding or even reducing funding, and funding flows in lots of ways, subsidized student loans, federal research grants, the overhead on federal research grants, all of this, if the taxpayer spigot gets turned down, this whole thing collapses. And so I think university leadership will be careful not to jeopardize their funding from taxpayers.
Well, so you had Bob Kraft the other day, the owner of the Patriots, who's funded an entire center for Jewish life at Columbia, come out and say, I'm holding my money. And the statement from Columbia was, well, thank you very much for your previous donations. Like, that didn't say to me, like, hey, we care about your money, Mr. Kraft. It was more like, you know, thank you. As Ariana Grande would say, I'm trying to be cool with the kids. Thank you. Next. I didn't feel like it was sort of like, I was like, dude, that's a lot of money on the table.
Well, I mean, Robert Kraft alone doesn't have enough money, but don't, I mean, taxpayers yeah. is well, taxpayers are footing the large share of this, but honestly, individual donors do also have a very big effect. And I think they're the ones who did in the leadership at both Harvard and Penn. And people may say, oh, well, what do they care? Harvard has over $50 billion in endowment, but they also have over a $5 billion a year operating budget. So they need every penny they can get and more to keep that gigantic enterprise going. And so they may act like they don't care, like thank you next, but they will care if there is an organized boycott on the part of individual donors, as well as if there are threats from policymakers to cut off subsidies.
Yeah. Jess, I want to ask you a personal question, and if you don't want to answer it, please don't. But have you had a conversation with your parents about either the amount of money that they're, you know, or that your family, I don't know who's paying for your college, and I don't mean to pry, but do they say, hey, Jess, what's going on? Like we're all paying a lot of money for this, or, you know, we worked hard for this. And are they concerned about what you're learning?
Yeah, actually, I just spoke to my mom for a long time yesterday and the day before, and she was pretty livid. I'm sorry. I think there's actually a fire drill happening in my dorm right now. But I'm not entirely sure. Anyways, she's really mad. She was incensed by the fact that I couldn't go onto a lawn. And, you know, if the protesters were to deny, if I was trying to walk on the lawn with my parents and they were to deny us access to the lawn with my parents, I would also be incensed because, I mean, they're footing the bill. I'm also footing the bill. I'm going to be in debt for a long time after this. And I really wish that I felt the impact of my education more than I do in a positive sense, in a sense where I felt I was more confident in having these difficult conversations. And truly, I think the most of that learning in having difficult conversations has come within the last week of me putting myself in a situation where I am surrounded by people with very differing viewpoints. So that type of crucial learning honestly has not come from the classes I've taken at Columbia.
I want to ask you this. When you leave Columbia, to Jay's point, you're going to get hit up for money as an alum. They're going to ask you to donate. Will you donate to Columbia?
Truly, it depends on how this situation resolves, and it depends on how much my job pays me upon graduation, provided I do get one. And the market seems tough right now. But I just want to say about like Robert Kraft pulling his funding, I completely understand. But at the same time, it's like now more than ever do we need funding for Jewish community, for Jewish life on Columbia's campus. So it's like this damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of situation, I guess.
Yeah. Jess, I'm going to ask you, I can hear the sirens in the back and I can hear the alarm going off. I can hear the sirens. I can hear the alarm. I want to, for your safety, why don't we let you go? Please keep yourself and your fellow students safe. Do whatever you need to do. I don't want to tell you what to do. I don't know if you're supposed to get out of the building or not, but please do that. I want to continue the conversation with Jay if I can for a few more minutes, but thank you for being with us and sharing this experience.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet.
Thank you.
Jay, listen, I mean, it's interesting because I feel like she's a very brave young woman and she's saying she doesn't, but if I was walking across a campus and I was confronted about why aren't, I mean, I feel like it's the soup Nazi episode of Seinfeld in a much more serious, not funny way, where it's like, why aren't you wearing the ribbon? And she's talking about not wearing a mask and, you know, them coming after her. That's intimidating and scary because you don't know where that line is, right? I know this is apropos of nothing, but I'm watching this video yesterday of Alec Baldwin. And this woman is in a coffee shop and she's saying, say free Palestine, free Palestine. Just say it, Alec. And he finally smacks her.
Come on, Alec, just say free Palestine one time. One time, just one time, please. And I'll leave you alone. Free Palestine. F- Israel, f- Zionism. Please say it. One time.
You can
And I'm not here to condone anything, but that just shows you that there's a line that a lot of people have after which when you push them, they're going to react. And I'm thinking about that if I'm a student on campus and I say, hey, look, I don't want to do this. And you don't know who that, where that line is for the individual that's egging you on. Why aren't you joining us? Why don't you have a mask on? And I get your point about rich privileged kids, but I also think for what I've seen on social media, you don't know which nut job you're facing off with next.
Oh, I agree. I mean, look, you're exactly right. That at any time, this could spill over into something much more dangerous. I don't think it's there just yet, but it could at any time. And the whole purpose of this, of these mobs chanting genocidal slogans and threatening students and pushing Zionists, by which they mean Jews very clearly, out of the crowd, the very purpose of it is to drive Jewish students away from campus, to prevent them from fully participating in Columbia University. And again, as you were saying earlier, if this were to be the case for any other category of student, Black students, gay students, any other category, we would immediately recognize this as horribly discriminatory and unacceptable. But because it's Jews, it's happening, but let's be clear, these students don't just hate Israel or Jews, they hate America. This will spread from Columbia, from rich privileged kids in elite universities, to your state university if we don't get on top of things. It can become the 60s here, where they spill over into revolutionary movements like the Weather Underground and actually start, you know, shooting cops and blowing up banks.
You know, the left always likes to paint the right as the extremist, intolerant people. We hate gays. We hate people of color. We hate women who are in the workforce. I mean, it's that's the mentality of these folks on the left. Everyone on the right is horrible and evil. And yet it is the left that is funding, that is giving oxygen to these people who hate Jews, who hate people because of, I mean, I just find it somewhat interesting that the Democratic Party benefits from a large percentage of the Jewish vote. And yet, once again, it is the Democratic Party and the left that are supporting and funding and promoting this hatred and anti-Semitism towards Jewish Americans.
Well, I mean, I don't think Jews are going to be voting for Democrats as much as they used to.
Do you think this is the tipping? Donald Trump always says, hey, all the support that I give to Israel. I've always maintained that Israel is not necessarily, you can be Jewish and not completely supportive of Israel, kind of like the Bernie Sanders type, which I I'm not agreeing with it. I just say I see it. You think that there's actually a political consequence?
I do. I mean, unfortunately, Jews are too small as a percentage of the population to be decisive in very many states. Pennsylvania, I think, is going to be a tougher contest for Biden because I think he may lose some of the Jewish vote there. I think Fetterman helps him maybe stave that off. But, you know, where you have large concentrations of Jews are not tightly contested states. And so I think the fact that Jews won't be going, you know, 80%, 70% for Democrats as they have in the past, and it may be closer to 50-50, won't make too much of a difference.
You know, it's interesting. I get asked a lot by pollsters, what do you think I should add in? And I want to, the next time I talk to a Brent Buchanan, who we had on yesterday, I think this is a really interesting point, and I would love to start having this added in. I get it's not a decisive, but if Biden wants to, quote, make a play for Florida, which is ridiculous, you can't do that as a Democrat without doing well in South Florida in the Boca Raton type area. So I think this would be a really fascinating polling question to add in of Jewish Americans. The last thing I want to ask you is this. There are a lot of, I mean, you talk about the foreign influences, and I've heard a lot about foreign students being part of this. Mike Pence and others, Mike Pompeo, I heard earlier today being one of them, Tom Cotton, the senator from Arkansas, another, who said, hey, if you're a foreigner here in America and you are protesting on this issue, you should have your student visa revoked and sent home. Do you agree?
I entirely agree. But that's actually part of why universities are not cracking down on these protesters. MIT, which is about a third foreign students. So these elite universities, we're talking about a quarter, a third foreign students, many of whom are leaders in these radical mobs. And then the university has declared they don't want to discipline these students for violation of their rules or have them get arrested for fear that it will jeopardize their visa status and cause them to be deported. And so because the universities don't want to lose this revenue stream of full paying foreign students and large donors from rich families abroad, they don't want to crack down on them, and they don't want to enforce their rules, and they don't want to have arrests. But I think soon they're going to have no choice, because commencement's coming up in a few weeks on the same ground where the occupiers are pitching tents at Columbia. If Jess's parents can't come and participate in the commencement in that yard, they're going to be very angry. And the university is going to suffer politically and financially. And so the universities are now between a rock and a hard place. If they don't crack down and start arresting and suspending, including their foreign students, they are going to face a backlash from politicians and parents.
Don't you think, though, that this is, you know, when I was a kid, every once in a while, you heard about the kid that got the harsh punishment. They said, we're making an example of him or her. Don't you think that right now, if you're the president, university president, you mentioned, I think, University of Minnesota and some others, that the way to handle this is to say, here's the deal. If you're not out of the yard by X amount, we're starting to arrest people. And you just literally go out and arrest them. Boom, boom, boom. And you're suspended and out. You need to make examples of these folks and prove that there's zero tolerance.
I agree. That's exactly what they need to do. But because university leadership is not particularly principled, they aren't willing to stand up and pay the short-term price for the long-term benefit.
Right.
But they need to do it, and they will be forced to do so, I think, Karen, in a few weeks.
Jay Green, I appreciate you being with us and explaining this. You have a very unique perspective, having been on a campus and being part of these movements and issues and understanding them. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
You bet. All right, folks, remember, please continue to subscribe and share. I can't tell you how much it has meant to me over the last few weeks to see the growth in the show because of you. Ask people to join, share the show with them, but more importantly, hit subscribe and hit that notification button on YouTube, Rumble. Go over to Apple and Spotify, get the audio version so you've always got it, no matter where you're going. I mean, we got a lot of travel coming up during the holidays, Memorial Day, 4th of July. You want to have the show in your car wherever you go in case you can't see the audio, the video version. And as usual, tune in to the first if you have DirecTV, channel 347 every night at 7 o'clock. Thanks for being here. We'll be back tomorrow with the big panel.